Hi, I'm Robert Martin, and this is the Men of Magic podcast, a one-on-one interview with the best that Magic the Gathering has to offer. Welcome to a special episode of the Men of Magic. Thanks to my interview last week with Osup, we have AJ Sacker on to talk to Osup via a conference call for a little bit till AJ has his own segment on the show. Gentlemen, hello.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, how's it going?
Okay, AJ, you wanted to begin. You had some comments regarding what Osup said about the young players in Magic.
Yes. Well, first of all, that interview was awesome. Good job, both of you guys. I agree completely with nearly everything Osup said. I think that the whole thing with Channel Fireball's domination is largely due to basically the laziness and complacency in the rest of us. And I know that, it's easy to point to the Japanese, but as Osip pointed out, you know, a lot of their pillars of their community stopped playing as much for various reasons, and the Euros are all pokering. But in the American scene, there's this whole thing with the Star City Circuit, and being the elder statesman of the Star City Circuit, it's kind of fallen on Jerry Thompson and myself to kind of pick up the scene around us. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, it seems like other than like maybe Edgar Flores and Nick Spagnolo or Alex Brancini, I think you and Jerry are probably like the core five, I would say, most well-known and respected Star City grinders probably.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. And yeah, Jerry and I, it's definitely true for myself. I can't speak for anyone else that since the Star City Circuit has come around, I haven't tried to get back on the Pro Tour. I said I had an interview on another podcast recently, and I talked about how, like, I was on the Pro Tour for 3 years, and I had a GP top 8, you know, moderate success, and that was way, way harder than making level 8 at the Star City Circuit, but got me, like, no recognition. Whereas the Star City Circuit, like, I'm super ballin' famous now.
But can I ask you, like, do you care that much about getting on the Pro Tour? Like, do you just, you know those guys more. Like, is it as much a priority for you anymore? Because, frankly, I wouldn't blame you that much if you didn't want to, because, like I said in my interview, when I was growing up, we wanted to get onto the Pro Tour because that's all we had to validate ourselves in terms of whether or not we're good. You guys have something else now, so I'm not really sure if it really matters that you want to get onto the Pro Tour. I don't think it's a good or a bad thing to be where you're at. I think the Star City Game Open Series has changed professional Magic in a lot of ways that people really haven't figured out yet. Like, even from something like Callblade, probably wouldn't have been as dominant as it was if it wasn't for a Star City Game Open Series. You know what I mean? Which is strange to think of.
Yeah,
so, like, the Star City Game Open Series has done a lot of different things to professional Magic that I don't think people have wrapped their heads around. So I'm not saying, when I say that you guys don't try on the Pro Tour, I don't say that really as a negative. I just say that it's strange to me
because
I'm not used to it from my world, you know?
No, I agree completely. And, I mean, that's definitely true. That's what I'm trying to say is, like, I've definitely grown complacent due to the Star City Games Open Series existence. Like, I've skipped GPs and I've basically stopped testing at all because, like, these tournaments are a lot softer than GPs or Pro Tours. So I can, like, put in a fraction of the effort and have way more success. Like, I'm making far more money on the Open Series than I was when I was on the Pro Tour, getting more recognition. And yeah, like, that has made me grow complacent. That's for me. I cannot speak for anyone else. But I will say that a lot of the younger guys are trying to get on the Pro Tour and have success on the big stage. The problem is that they are not succeeding, to put it bluntly.
Here's my question, and I think this is maybe where Osup was coming from on this. If you notice the structure of Team Fireball, there's Luis kind of is the figurehead, the face of the group. David Ochoa is kind of the brains of the group, if you want to call it. And then you have the section of group that's the deck builders and the section of the group that's the tinkers and stuff like that. Where you guys come into these events.
The testers, yeah. I mean, their team is beautifully constructed. Like, obviously, that kind of happened naturally. It's not like there was a big draft and, you know, they did well in it. But, like, they have sculpted, like, a near-perfect team environment. And are all amazing players, and that's why they've had so dominant of successes recently.
But you guys have that same kind of talent, and I think that's what Osip was, I know he was saying that, is that you guys can be that same kind of dominance if you want to be the front face man and Jerry may want to be the one that's the brains, and then the rest of the guys be the testing part of the team.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's definitely potential. I think that a lot of the potential is overstated. I think, like, back in the day, which is stupid for me to say because I'm here with Osip, who's, like, an actual old schooler, and I'm, like, a baby compared to him. But, like, back in the day, to get to the pro tour, to be on the big teams, you know, you needed to shut your mouth and listen to the people that were masters and, you know, test and grow and learn. And, like, it was really, really hard to do anything with an ego when everything was so team-oriented. And now, with all these young kids, and they are kids, having way more success than they realize is reasonable for them to have, it's pure ego. Like, there's no improvement. Like, again, these are my friends, so it hurts me to say it, but, like, if I were to start a team, it would not start with the Star City Grinders.
I kind of agree with AJ just because I've said this before, but it seems to me that the main difference between the Star City Game Open Series, if you were to compare the Star City Game Open Series to the Pro Tour, it'd be like trying to compare tennis to basketball, where it's like one is clearly a much more individual sport than a team-oriented sport, where it's like, I grant that the Pro Tour is not as team-oriented as it used to be, but if you want to be consistently successful on the Pro Tour, you need that team structure, where in the Open Series, you don't need a team structure. Like, Nick Spagnuolo and AJ Thatcher and Edward Flores, they could win just on their own. Like, you and Jerry T could win just on your own because there's not that much need for innovation there. It's like, you know what the format's going to be. You know you're better than most of the players. All you need to do is play a stock list that's, like, slightly tweaked for what you think the tournament's going to be like, and you can pretty much win the tournament. So, like, there's not that much need for innovation, and if there's no need for innovation, there's no need for a team environment. And, like, individuality can succeed on its own.
My big thing is, like, okay, when I heard that interview, I was just like, holy crap, I want to start a Magic team, you know? Because, like, it relit a fire in me that I do want to get back to the Pro Tour, which this is probably the first time I've said that since I fell off. I officially want to be back on the Pro Tour and try and prove myself on the big stage because I know I can cut up the Star City all day. That doesn't mean anything anymore. When we talk about team dynamics, it's easy to say, like, oh, these guys know each other, and they see each other a lot, and they all have success at the same tournaments, so why don't they start a team? But, like, that's not how it works, because we wouldn't have any team dynamics. Like, for me to start a team...
Let me just say this, because I'm going to have to jump off you, but I kind of want to just say this. Whenever I see you guys, especially you and Jerry, because I actually know you guys fairly well, and I like you guys a lot too, as opposed to just thinking you're good Magic players. So, like, whenever I see you guys just grind it out in the Open Series, my biggest peeve with that is, like, I get it, you know, you guys are all stars there, and that's fine, but, like, I actually think you can be successful on the Pro Tour. Like, I think it's perfectly fine. I just think it's, you guys think that it's some sort of mystery, and it's some weird formula in order how do you do this. But it's very, very simple. Like, I'm not a genius. Anybody who's had a successful team on the Pro Tour, they're not really, like, geniuses. It's just a simple formula that you follow. And the thing is that, like, everyone's usually – if you're decent at Magic, you're going to be a good tester. And you're probably going to find a couple of good tuners. The only thing that people need and that most people are missing is that big idea, man. And that's hard to find because there's not that many out there. But, like, if you were to tell me there was a team, okay, so let's say Pro Tour Philly's coming up, and the team is Brad Nelson, Paolo, Owen, Dave Ochoa, and, like, Josh Utter-Leighton, and then you said there's another team of Michael Jacob, Patrick Chapin, you, Jerry, and, like, Alex Bertoncini, I would bet money on your team before I would bet on the Channel Fireball guys. And I agree that all five of the Channel Fireball guys that I listed are probably better individually. They're probably more talented than the five players I named.
Most definitely.
But the fact is, you guys have the idea, man. Of the 10 people I listed, there is only one true idea man in that group, and that's Chapin. And besides Chapin, Jacob's pretty good on his own, too. So, like, of the 10 people I listed, there's only one, maybe two idea men, and they're both on your team. So I'm going to put money on your team before I put money on the Channel Fireball guys, because no matter how talented they are, if you're going to build a deck for a new format, you need at least one idea man. So for you guys, I know that you can't all team, like, obviously you don't get all the grinders together, but, like, you get a couple of you guys together, and you just find that idea man. And that's the hardest part, is finding that guy, because there's so few out there, and it's hard to judge who's really good and who's not. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And sure. I just, and then you just gotta work. Like, even if you don't test every day, like when we were doing well in Cogit, we didn't play Magic every day. We didn't really grind on Moto. We emailed each other back and forth during the week because we all had jobs and other stuff. And then on the weekend, we would just get together and play all day. And then we did that for like 2 weekends before the Pro Tour. That was it. Like, that was the extent, you know? And it's not that hard of a formula. You just have to be willing to work at it. And I know none of us like to work. That's why we play Magic. But the truth is that, like, if you're not willing to work for at least 2 weeks before an event, that's, like, basically you're working a total of, like, what, just three Pro Tours in a Worlds? That's, like, basically 8 weeks of the year that you really have to work. Like, that's nothing. Like, and if you're not willing to do that, then you're not going to be successful on the Pro Tour. But if you can do that, I think that that's all you really need. You need to find the idea man, and then you just need to be able to work. And the hardest part is just the idea man, because it's really rare to find somebody like that.
Yeah, I agree completely. I think I would add that an organizer or a head man is equally important.
I agree with that too. I just don't think that's as hard to find. I mean,
yeah, it's far less
usually rare. Usually it's like the oldest person in the group because you know you're the most responsible and then you know something like that. But like, because I've been on teams with Jerry, like, and I think you were even on a team for like, I think it was for Amsterdam when like Phil was cute and we were trying to build decks. The people we had on that list, it was like me, Phil, Owen was on that list, like, Cedric was on that list, Jerry, like, there was a bunch of really good players on that list, but we didn't have an idea man, and none of us were organized, so we were very sloppy.
Yeah, the organization.
And everybody eventually just it's the same thing, that anytime anybody tries to build a team like that for a Pro Tour, the same thing always happens. Somebody forms some sort of message board, you guys email ideas back and forth, nothing really sticks, nobody likes any of the decks. Eventually, people just disband and play whatever pet deck they were working on, and that's it. That's usually what happens. That's for 90% of the people that play on the Pro Tour for their first time. That's usually how the Pro Tour works out for them, which is sad because
that team ended up
hard to organize.
Half the people on that team ended up playing like that really untuned dredge list, and the other half just picked up a deck the night before.
Yeah. And, you know, and it's a lot of good players, it's a lot of talent, but there was no idea man and there was no organization, so it just doesn't matter.
Yeah, that was not a successful Pro Tour team.
All right, I gotta run, but it was good talking to you guys.
Thank you, Thanos.
Take care.
That should have probably helped a little bit as far as getting a better explanation of what was going on. My whole thing is that you guys have such ability to do well. And like you said, you do need that idea guy. And if you can put this together, there's no reason why there can't be one, two, three really good teams.
I want to go back to what I really want to talk about right now that has to do with that is how you are supposed to grow as a Magic player. All right, how young talent develops into successful players.
Okay.
And I think that the Star City Open Series is the exact thing to look for, or to look to, if you just want to have, you know, your moment in the limelight. I know Edgar has not qualified for a Pro Tour. Alex just qualified for Philly. Philly will be his first Pro Tour. Drew Levins will also be his first Pro Tour, I believe. like Spagnuolo was in Chiba and like maybe one or two other pro tours, but that's it. Like if you take Jerry and I out of the equation, that is the total amount of pro tour experience on the Star City circuit.
That's not a lot.
It's not barely any.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm trying to say is to create, like Joseph said, the Star City is like an individual sport because, and I don't think it's, I mean, a large reason is because it's not a fresh format. It's the same format over and over, you know, until there's like rotations and whatnot. But I mean, there's not that much like
innovation.
Yeah. You don't need it. The format isn't resetting, you know? Like, we don't have to build a modern deck all of a sudden for a Pro Tour, like the Pro Tour guys do. We just play usually the same deck or another deck we understand really well, week in and week out. Because, again, GPs, there's a GP every once in a while and four Pro Tours a year. There's a Star City thing, like, every weekend.
And that's a great way for you guys to, like you said, you make good, very good money at it.
I mean, that's why Jerry does well. Like Joseph said, Jerry has had amazing Grand Prix success and obviously amazing Star City success and has basically done nothing on the Pro Tour. And that is because he is an amazing tuner, but isn't an idea man. He doesn't work with an actual direct team. He just kind of networks with everybody. Like, everybody knows who Jerry is. But without that core team with the idea guy and the organizer and the testers and tuners, you're not going to have success on the PT.
Well, how can we get this together to make this happen? Because Osip and I both said this during the interview. It's like, if you're picking right now, if you're having people to predict do well on the Pro Tour, there's about a list of maybe 10 to 15 people you think of right off the top of your head that can win.
Yeah.
And that number...
Yeah, when you see a Pro Tour top 8...
Yes.
Like, that should... It usually has, like, 6 of the 30 people you could name.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody who tries to say that Magic is a game of luck, just look at the Pro Tour top 8s and top 16s. It's so consistent that it defies variance.
When you guys go to GPs, GPs are way different than Pro Tours. It's it's almost like a social gathering than anything else. Sure, there are some points on the line, but you're there, you do well, you have fun, you're hanging out with everybody. Great.
Yeah, I mean, prize for GPs is just... Yeah, I mean, like, to get on my little soapbox here, GPs are, like, near irrelevant. Unless you top 8... Or, like, top 16 if you're not cute. Like, top 16 in a GP is like winning a PTQ, but way, 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 way harder. And unless you top 8 the GP or pretty much win the GP, I know that I would not be content. Like, I've top 32'd, like, 3 of my past 5 GPs or something like that and have gone home extremely upset every time. And I feel like that's not a good sign of a healthy tournament if out of 2,000 people, only 8 are... happy. That's not a well-run tournament. That's another topic for another day. The thing about teams, Pro Tour success, let's start there. The thing about Pro Tour success is very few people have the qualities that lend themselves to being successful on the Pro Tour. Coming back from moderate Pro Tour success and then like kind of being self-defeating, like looking back, I know what I did wrong and what I would change and blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
Having that direct hindsight and experience on the Pro Tour, I can tell you what it takes to make it there, and I can point to pretty much anybody. Like, you could point out, you can name a name, and I will tell you if they could make it on the Pro Tour or if they don't have what it takes. That's a harsh thing.
You refer it to that way, but there are a lot of guys out there that, in my mind, I picture that could make the Pro Tour.
And no offense, but you have not played on the Pro Tour.
No, and it's true. I agree. No.
You're to look from the outside and say, hey, he's doing well here and could succeed on the Pro Tour. And without, like, sitting down and talking to them, it's, I don't know, it's hard to articulate. It's just they aren't going to make it, no matter how sad that is.
Isn't there a point of, because you and Jerry have experience, that they could be molded to take what they do right now and skill-wise and work with them if they can, if they put their ego aside.
That's the thing. No matter how persuasive and informed Jerry and I are,
yeah,
or are being, we cannot get through egos. It's impossible. And that's, like, the absolute worst thing that can happen to a young Magic player is success. That is the biggest curse. Like, I wouldn't wish success on any of my best friends. I hope that all of the people that I hate have a lot of success out of nowhere, because then they're done.
In many ways, as much as Star City Games Tour makes stars...
It makes stars in the Star City circuit.
Yes.
All those, quote, stars are 20-somethings that are now in the limelight for being able to be better than, I mean, like, the Star City Open Series, if you've ever watched CG Live.
Yes.
The play skill is not the highest.
No. I agree with that. That's why when you watch the coverage and a name that you recognize isn't on there, you're wondering who these two people are, and you see small, intricate mistakes that happen during the match that, as a viewer, can drive you nuts.
Yeah. No, and I mean, I do want to say that it's a lot easier to see the correct play when you're watching it on a camera sitting at home than when you're in the game.
I agree.
I think a lot of people are far too harsh, but it is like it. The Star City Open Series does have a low skill threshold in general, and that's why it is so easy for the few people who take the game seriously.
But you said that hurts your ability to play well, and it's kind of demotivated you.
No. It doesn't hurt your ability to play well. It hurts your ability to learn to play better.
Okay. But Magic is a game where you're constantly evolving and increasing.
You're supposed something. To be.
Okay, you're right. You're right, you're supposed to be. I agree. But those skills are needed to compete on the highest level.
Agreed. And I'm saying that the Star City Games Open Series does not cultivate that inside of its young talent. Because of the low skill threshold and because of the arrogance of youth and egos involved.
What could be done to change that to make
Nothing.
It better? Nothing?
Nothing. It's up to the individual. When Jerry and I started playing the Open Series competitively, we both kind of gave up on the Pro Tour and started grinding the Open Series, and both had, like, pretty big success pretty early, realized it was, like, easy and decent money, and stuck with it. Now, Jerry pretty much always needs to have people around him that look up to him. He needs people that he can share ideas with and have conversations with. Now, I also really, really, really enjoy teaching. And I have also tried to pick up players that I thought had potential and cultivate their skill. Like, Jerry and I have both done this separately and together. And it's hard because, I mean, I don't want to name names, but I've gone through, like, 6 or 7 people that, after working with them for a certain amount of time, have realized are complete lost causes.
But that's a hard thing to say because...
It is. No, it is. It's hard for me emotionally because I do grow attached to these people. At a certain point, people just don't learn anymore. For a while now, kind of my main man, the guy I've been working with the most, is Chris Van Meter.
Okay.
I met him fairly recently. I met him, all these tournaments run together. The one where I lost to Alex Bertoncini in the finals of the Legacy, I was so, so sick that weekend. It might have been Memphis, maybe? Dallas? I don't know. Somewhere like that. I just was the sickest I've ever been that weekend. Was grinding it out on tons and tons of, you know, Sudafed and Advil. But I met CBM that weekend. He lent me cards for day one, and we ended up meeting in the top 4 of day 2. I started talking to him more, and he listened and started winning more. Then Jerry started talking to him more. He has continued to grow, is still growing, and I think is one of the very few people on the Star City circuit that has the potential for Pro Tour success.
What slot would he fit in if you had a picture of the team right now? What is his strength, besides listening?
He's still really young in Magic terms, so he would still be one of the grinders. The grinder is the guy play the gauntlet decks that you test against and with and amongst each other to sort of figure out the metagame and what beats what and whatnot. They're the ones who don't understand the game on a deep enough level to do any tuning yet, but are talented enough and willing to learn enough that they're growing as a player and are competent opponents to throw next.
The more you grind, the better chance you have to gain that knowledge of how to sideboard correctly and do all the other things that you need to do. So yes, it's a great learning experience. And for some,
it's sort of like being the tank wipe at a gas store or something like that. You just kind of have to do it. It's building the character and developing the basic skills that you need to then be able to build your more complex skills on. That's the part that people don't have. Like, I see it time and time again. People experience moderate success, immediately let it go to their head, and then they no longer have that. They don't develop any foundation and just try and build weird structures that kind of float like anti-gravity. You know, like they don't have any roots, any basis in reality. You become a gimmicky player by doing that, and gimmicks only work for so long.
Cobblade's going to rotate out. What are they going to do?
Lose a lot. Like, again, I can't get into too much of, because there's so many small things that I see that maybe some others don't, or they disagree with, or don't think are necessarily bad things. It's really, really hard for me to explain it all, but Pro Tour Honolulu 2, it's me and Tim Ayton and maybe Ben Swartz watching the top 8 on the big screen, and they're just about to start, and they're showing the player profiles, and, you know, BDM's introducing everybody, and Ayton said that only Kazuya or somebody else, like he named two people, said only one of those two can win this Pro Tour. Ben was like, obviously that's ridiculous. There's too much variance to just say that one of them's going to win. These other people are also talented. Obviously, I'll take the field against those two. They put money on it, and sure enough, Kazuya wins. It's easy to look at that and be like, oh, well, you know, it was probably an even bet, or like, maybe Ben had an edge, but Tim spiked. If you think about it, and you understand what's going on, then 99% that Tim had it. Now, that's on the highest level. I'm just talking about going from Star City / PTQs / FNMs. Look, I don't want to get caught up on the Star City. I'm just using the Star City Games Open Series as a point of reference, because that's what I'm doing. So that's what I know the most about. But this is true if you're coming from any type of Magic, trying to get to the highest level, playing competitively. Whether that's FNM or PTQs or, you know, regionals or random MOX tournaments or whatever, this is true for all of it. There are certain traits that make it impossible to succeed, and there are certain traits that you absolutely need to succeed. Looking at somebody, you can say, he's good, he's had moderate success, he could probably do well in the Pro Tour if he put his mind to it. 10 out of 10, you're probably right, but that's not always true. Having worked with these kids, and I say kids, but I mean most of them are my age, but in Magic terms, they're kids. I've been working with these kids, and it becomes increasingly obvious who has it and who doesn't.
Isn't there a level of frustration for you because of the Star City Tour, or any other tour, like whatever, the PTQ scene, or whatever level of competition you want to be at that's not the Pro Tour? They're real, sure, real good at it, and they don't look one step beyond, because one of my things I've been kind of upset about personally is that people don't look at the Pro Tour as you play Magic, you can make a living at it, you can do this, that. Isn't the Hall of Fame kind of at the end of this, where you want to get...
I mean, no. Nobody like gets on the Pro Tour. Nobody like is at, you know, wins round one of a PTQ and is like, man, I can't wait till I'm in the Hall of Fame.
As you're progressing as a player and you're on the Pro Tour and you're doing really well, you've done so well at it that over time, and that's the big thing, is time. Because you're looking at, most of these guys have such a small window of Magic that they're like you said, you're looking at him at a very small view compared to yourself and Jerry, where you have quite the resumes, and that makes a difference.
Just like there are certain qualities that you need to go from semi-competitive play to high-level competitive play, there is an even more fractioned-off subgroup, tiny, tiny subgroup, of people that have what it takes to go from really, really good at high-level play to, like, immortal mastery. Each level, there's, like, a whole group of people that have plateaued and will never get to the next level. Every single level, like, whether that's the most casual of casual players up into, like, PTQ top 8ers, up into GP top 16ers, and Star City Games grinders, and at every stage of success, imagine a mountain. The mountain obviously symbolizes levels of Magic success. And you're climbing up this mountain. As you're going up the mountain, you see that every once in a while, there's like a plateau, like a cliff hanging out, where just thousands of people are chilling. They're like sitting having a picnic. Are you going to climb past them? Or are you going to go, like, you know, hang out with all those people with their, like, peanut butter sandwiches that look pretty good?
It depends on what your level of desire is.
Exactly. Desire is absolutely one of the essential qualities, but that you have to be able to guide that desire in a way that's productive. I am and have been one of the most passionate players that I've ever met. For a while, I was channeling that in the exact right direction, and I got really, really good for a while, but then success is just the worst thing that can happen to somebody. And I didn't even have good success. I had, like, really mediocre success. All of that passion that was so concentrated and channeled properly kind of dispersed. It kind of, like, sprayed outward rather than being properly honed into sort of jettisoning me forward up the mountain, if you will. So it is one thing to say that desire and passion are important, but it's all about how you guide it. And that's really what Jerry and I are trying to teach people. Jerry and I also have very, very different approaches. Jerry and I work extremely well together. We're like the perfect married couple, where it's like, in some regards, we're exactly the same, and in some regards, you're exactly opposite. Because if you're opposite in everything, you just fight and hate each other. If you're exactly the same in everything, it gets boring, and you don't get anything done. We melt and weld well together. But the way that we approach teaching people is very, very different. I'm much more harsh than he is. Like I said, I am considering starting my own Magic team because of that OSIP interview. I think it was really good, and he had a lot of amazing points, and I agree with him completely. And I do want to do something like that. But if I were to be the captain or coach of a Magic team, it would be way different than Jerry's quote team. Jerry has like 400 people or something ridiculous like that he just like is always in contact with. And it's like super disorganized, and it's really like fast and loose. He just kind of like everything goes through his brain. I mean, we're similar in the sense that we don't really need to put in that many hours into directly testing ideas anymore. Once we understand an idea, we understand the game at a deep enough level that we can kind of do the playtesting in our head. But he channels and churns through more words than I do by an unbelievable amount. And that approach is very different. I kind of got sidetracked there, but how we approach teaching people, he, like, picks one or two dudes and really hold their hand and turn them into what he thinks they should
be. Is that necessarily good for them? Because, I mean, look at the way everybody has a unique style of playing Magic. Your style and Jerry's style, even though you play against each other and you may play the same deck, it's the way you react to things and he reacts to things are different.
And he's just way, way better than me is what that actually is. I made that sound worse than it is. It really, I mean, he's had a lot of success in raising young players. Again, I'm not going to name any names, but he's been working with some people and they have shown promise and ended up being reasonably successful. My thing is, I don't want to help someone that I don't think will put that help to good use, or is capable of really breaking through at an extremely high level.
But what you have to say is you're at a different stage of Magic, where if you're trying to go back to the Pro Tour and play on the highest level and be successful at it, you really need to have a group that's focused, taking someone under the wing. You may have to spend time doing other things than strictly focusing on the task at hand.
No, I agree. Like, if you gave pretty much anyone to Jerry, he could make them into really good players. If you give someone to me, there's like an 80% chance that I will give up on them within a week. My big thing right now is ego. There's a huge difference between confidence and ego. Ego gets in the way of growth, while confidence is like propellant of success.
So what you're saying is there's that fine line, and certain players, because they're young, are crossing.
It's not that fine. Yes, but I don't think the line is that fine. It's just to an untrained eye, they look the same. But in reality, it all comes down to learning and growth. The people that I have given up on have allowed their egos to inhibit growth.
But it's going to get to a point that they're going to play the Star City Tour or whatever level of Magic they choose to play at. There's going to be a point where they're going to realize that some of the people they're playing with are moving on and moving up. And they'll be the one that are left behind.
It doesn't matter.
Really.
It won't matter to them. Yeah. No, because they're content. They're complacent. It's, for me, I saw other Star City grinders start having success on the Pro Tour, and I stayed on the Star City grind because I didn't care. That's definitely going to happen. Or the Star City grind is going to become more popular, and more people that are growing are going to come on, and the formats are going to rotate, and the people that are having sustained success, or that are having current success, won't be able to have sustained success.
So we're basically waiting for rotation to see how this shakes out, to see actually who's the nuts and who's not.
Yeah, it's not just rotation, because I don't know if that's going to be enough for reality to strike, but we're just going to have to keep waiting and see, because I don't know, I don't want to say too much, but it's going to be really, really interesting. This next, like, say, 4 or 5 months are going to be really, really, really interesting. Like, if you're into Magic drama, then keep an eye on what's going on for the next few months. I want to talk about Ali Andrazi for a minute, if I could.
Winner of Nationals.
All right. Yes, your U.S. National Champion. Ali is a guy I like a lot. I think he's really, really funny. I always have a good time whenever I see him at an event. I, like pretty much everyone else, thinks he's a pretty big doofus. And I mean that in the nicest way possible. He has more fun playing Magic than just about anyone else. It's like him and, you know, 12-year-old chewing bubble gum are like the two guys having the most fun in the whole tournament. A couple things are going on with Ali. One is, I don't know who he's been working with, if he's been working with anyone, but he is a really good idea man, as Osip was saying, a really, really good idea man, and a pretty bad tuner. If you look at his lists, the concept behind them are almost all fairly revolutionary, and the actual lists are always like 6 cards off. Which is a lot. 6 cards out of 60 is a lot. And again, I feel like I can say these negative things about Ali because I'm also saying a lot of positive things about him, and I like him a lot. I respect what he does. And I know that he takes criticism well. He's an idea man who, from my experience, has refused to have a tuner.
Hmm. If that would be refined, that would lead to a lot more success.
Yeah. I were to start a team, which I am thinking about doing, Ali is one of the first that came to my mind for the idea side of things. In fact, I thought this about him well before his Nationals win. He has a great personality and is a really good idea man, and I'd love to have him on a team if I ever get around to finishing starting one. But his downfalls are twofold, and I'm worried about one other thing. Downfall number one is that, from my experience, he has not worked with good tuners. despite having Jerry and I and many other Star City grinders at his disposal, he really, really, really is interested in doing his own thing, which to have big time success on the world stage, exactly, you can't do your own thing. Downfall number two is he doesn't take criticisms on specific things from his deck well. He's smart enough that he can defend any card choice with any workaround logic, even though for an experienced player looking at it from the outside, for somebody who's looking at it without it being their baby, they can see that there is a red flag in the deck. There's something wrong with the build. And again, this is just my experience. I don't want to say that this is how he is, but he doesn't do well in taking that advice, in listening and understanding that his list isn't automatically perfect.
Then let me ask you this question. If he would be at the next Pro Tour, wouldn't he get eaten alive because he has...
Yes. Right now, he would be eaten alive at a Pro Tour. But now that he's on a national team with a Channel Fireball guy, I'm really, 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 really hoping that he is forced to develop some team dynamics or some team skills and is able to grow in that way, because I think that that's really good for him. There's actually two things that worry me. One is that he ends up trying to do his own thing because it's what he's comfortable doing, which even if he works as with a team and it doesn't work out perfectly, he's still better off developing those skills than he is having one decent tournament but not developing those skills. You should always be playing to learn, not to do well. And that's a problem I've had a lot in the past as well. The second thing I'm worried about, Ali, is sort of validation. I feel like he's already like kind of stubborn in what in his decisions, but I'm afraid that by winning nationals, that will have validated his decision-making process, even though it does have flaws, yes, which I've pointed out. With that process validated, he might be remiss to actually go back and alter it in any way. Like I said, way began, and like I'll always say, this is going to become one of my catchphrases, one of my go-to phrases. Success is the worst thing that can happen to a Magic player. It really, really is, and I cannot stress that enough. Do not take success for what it is.
So, but you're saying this because you see the talent in him, that there is the next level him. So therefore, this is constructive criticism to help him get better. Because obviously, if you could have someone young like him, an idea person, a part of your team, all that does is it builds him better and it builds the whole concept of the team better.
Right. Sort of like advice directly to him in a public forum. I really, really, really am afraid of the things I mentioned, and I want to make sure that he is aware of them and is able to avoid those pitfalls. Because, like, I've joked around with him, you know, he'd be playing some crappy deck, and I'll tell him he's playing a crappy deck, and we'll laugh, and then we'll talk about something else, and then the round will start. Even though I was only half kidding, like, his deck was kind of pretty bad, and he was only, like, half joking, he was like, no, it's not, but... Ha ha ha, that's funny that you would say that. We have fun, but I am serious, Ali, if you're listening to this, and I am going to make you listen to this. You got to open up. You got to open up. Do not let the success go to your head. You got to open up. I feel like Ali, again, is one of the few people who actually can make it if he has the right direction, and I'm trying to offer it to him here.
But he's working with David Ochoa.
Right. Yeah. For Worlds, he will most likely be working with Channel Fireball due to the team portion. And I really hope that works out. I really, really, really hope that works out.
Being around them wouldn't help your game. Even if you just sit there and absorb it as far as how they test, what they're doing, what cards they're...
No. I agree. What I'm afraid of is that he won't absorb it.
It's hard when you observe things from an outside view like I do. You see an opportunity. That's why people say, why do you go to these tournaments? Because I want to see the best play, because if I see them play, I will catch something that will help me. Therefore, in his case, yeah. he has the ability to work right up close with them, to be able to literally be...
Yeah, it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
To represent the team, he could literally, with success at Worlds, acquire enough points to be queued for the next season.
More important than that, I don't care at all if Ali qualifies for the next Pro Tour. I love Ali, I want to see him do well, blah, blah, blah. I... Far more important than me seeing him qualify for the next Pro Tour is to see him develop team skills, develop contacts, and learn to learn. Those are the three things I want to see. Those three, and then way beneath them, have success on the Pro Tour. Because if he gets those three, then it's only a matter of time, and gauged by his dedication and passion. Which he has a lot of.
So is he better off not doing as many starts to the events and maybe just focusing on doing Motor Grind?
Yeah, as we get closer to Worlds, I would not be surprised if he skipped a few events. The Star City Open Series, it's like Farm Machine, you know, like batting practice, sort of.
Some of the matches you get, yes, it does seem like batting practice.
Yeah. Like, it's just to kind of keep your general knowledge up and... make sure your brain doesn't atrophy too much. What's that movie where there was that guy who, he was like a catcher in the big leagues, and then he got moved down to the minors? Yeah, that one. I feel like that. I feel like that's what Jerry and I are, going back to the Star City circuit, you know?
Nuke LaRouche, the wild pitcher that's got all the talent in the planet and doesn't want to listen because he's being distracted by everything else but what's happening in front of him.
Well, the problem is that everybody is super distracted, and most of them have a lot of talent. The guys that I think right now I really, really, really want to see more of and talk to more and work with more have been Chris Van Meter and Christian Valenti and Ali. Those are, like, my guys right now. The reason, and I know that it might be tacky to single them out publicly like this, but the reason that I'm looking forward to working with them over anyone else is because they each have different ones of the traits that you need to succeed, but they all have some of them and the potential to develop the others. Like, Christian Valenti listens and learns better than nearly anyone else. And Ali has a lot of idea potential and potential for technical growth. But, you know, he has those other drawbacks. Just like Christian Valenti's drawbacks are his stubbornness in deck choices and general lack of knowledge of the game. Chris Van Meter, I would say, is the most well-rounded, mostly because I've been working with him the longest, and so I've sort of trying to have been getting him to a point where he's comfortable in all these aspects. I just feel like every time I talk to him, he knows more about the game, is more technically sound, is more willing to learn and listen. These are all super important and super basic things, and it's stupid to point them out because they're like human things, you know, like they're like things you need in life. But you would be surprised at how rare they are.
You can apply this to anyone at any age, whether they're 20-something. There are people that are in their 40s.
Yeah, no, CDM's like an old man.
Just remember, there are people in their 40s and 50s that sometimes don't understand what's happening around them, and all they see is what they see through their rose-colored glasses.
Yep. Well, I mean, that's just ego. If you can't listen to somebody's argument and put yourself in their shoes... whether it's, you know, something in life or strategic discussion of Magic the Gathering, if you can't learn where they're coming from and understand what sort of concepts and theories they're trying to convey to you, then you're not going to be as developed as you could have been.
I wish that in many ways this could be relayed to as many of the young players as I could get their hands on this. There are so many people out there that have the ability, but yet, like you said, they tune themselves out. But there are people out there that are willing to help, like yourself, like Jerry. like Luis. There are other people out there that are just willing to give their time. And that's the one thing that people don't understand about magic, is that you have a regular life. This is a part of it. If you're giving your time to somebody, it's something that means something to you. That's what they're missing, is if you're willing to sit there before a tournament and spend an hour just, let's look at this deck. Okay, why did you put this in? You know, what is your plan for today? What are you looking at against red deck wins, or so on and so forth? And they're just kind of like, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, every time that I've had to give up or pass over a potential protege, it breaks my heart. Yeah, I mean, there's no other way to put it. I mean, if you're stuck in this rut, there's a reason. If you're not winning as much as you used to, there's a reason. If you can't compete on a higher level than you are competing at now, even if you're successful at your level, it's not variance. Something is wrong, and you need to do something. You need to address it in some fashion.
It's frustrating to listen to this as someone who loves the game like I do, because you see great players at the level they're at, and you want them to move to the next level, because, like I described in Osa's interview, I want the level of Magic to just keep accelerating upward. So when you make a Pro Tour, every round you're playing against someone that is an absolute machine, and you have to fight to get through and win. That's when you see Magic at its purest and its best. I refer back to Pro Tour Paris, when Paulo was playing Guillaume. Paulo wins that match, Player of the Year. Guillaume wins that match. He has to win that match, and he has to win his other match to become tied with Brad Nelson.
That's one of the best matches in the history of the Pro Tour. I actually had the pleasure of sitting down at the Pro Tour on the big screen, sitting next to Brad Nelson, watching that match.
I got you. What was Brad saying during the match?
We were discussing the possible lines of play and what could happen, and it was a sweat. I mean, he was sweating. He was stressing that player there. He wanted it. You know, like, you could see it in his eyes how badly he wanted it. And there's actually a great picture on the mothership from the coverage of that. Right as Paulo extends the hand, the crowd erupted, and Brad and Corey Baumeister, his little brother, and I just jumped up, fists in the air, screaming our heads off. It was a great moment, and I know that I'm never going to forget it, and it was really cool to be a part of it.
Those are the memories you'll never forget. That's kind of the reason why being a part of the Pro Tour and playing and seeing those moments makes Magic so fascinating.
Yeah.
You want to be Paulo sitting at that table. You want to be, I want to be him. I want to take on Guillaume. I'm not worried about the situation. We can do this. Let's make it happen.
Yeah.
That's why I understand why your passion for this is the way it is, and why it's frustrating to see other talent not understand it.
Yeah, and I mean, due to that OSIP thing, I am going to look into teams, but I've also realized through that and this that I really, really, really need to work on myself more. I have been slacking because the Star City series is pretty easy, and again, it all comes back to this, like, recognition thing. When I was on the Pro Tour, I worked alone. I, like, maybe talked to one or two friends. Like, for Berlin, I stayed and talked with Ben Lundquist. For most of the GPs back then, I was living in Chicago and was good friends with a then pretty much unknown Owen Turdenwald. But, like, for the most part, I was just grinding it away by myself. And when I had a little success, I thought that I was good enough to make it and stopped working as hard and didn't develop contacts like I should have, and all these horrible things went wrong in my personal life, and I let go of what could have been a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and it hurts.
You're looking to self-reflect, to grow forward. You're not... To take the first steps forward is to realize where you're at and where you want to be. That right there is an amazing step forward, because that will propel you to whatever you want to do. Too many people in life are more concerned with the, oh, worries me, worries me, worries me. Yeah, I can't do better. Life sucks. No, you can do anything you want to, as long as you put your mind and your heart to it. It can happen. And this is exactly where you're at that crossroads right now, of staring at yourself going, this is where I can be great.
a lot of that is also rooted in putting in meaningful effort. It's one thing to put in effort, but to know how to maximize that effort and make it count, I think is a rare skill that takes a lot of introspection and research, study, you know, just like anything in life. It's the same in magic. You have to know where to look.
Basically. And there are a lot of resources to get there for that point. You also have a lot of resources. Perfect example is like Osa, someone who is not 100% dedicated to the game like he used to be, but he had to stare down tables of Kai and Finkel and things like that to be able to be in those situations to go, okay, we may have to do it the way it used to be where they had to grind at tables and stare at paper in front of each other. But if you look at Owen, for example, you goes to Team Fireball, starts listening to Luis.
Yeah. Owen is actually a perfect example. And if I could
sure.
interrupt you and tell the story myself, because I'm super selfish like that. I've known Owen for a while, basically since I started playing. Like, I learned how to play Magic basically playing Vintage and Legacy tournaments around the Midwest. There's a big Vintage scene in Wisconsin, and there was a big Legacy scene in Chicago. So I'd go to those, and a lot of the time it would be me and Owen winning it, you know, back and forth. And we ended up talking, becoming friends and whatnot. And I learned more about technical magic from him than pretty much anyone else. He's been one of the best technical players for a long time. Like, he has been very, very underrated for very long. I remember still before he was having really, really high success, he had like a Legacy GP top 8. He top 8ed Columbus. Falling to Steve Sadin playing the best deck ever designed in the finals. But besides that, you know, he didn't really have that much success. I was like chilling at an airport food court and Gabe Walls walks over and we start chatting and I mentioned something about how I really was learning a lot from Owen and he, nothing to say except that Owen was just unbelievably underrated. That even though he hadn't put up these super high level results, he was very, very good and had been for a while. And I remember that for multiple PTQ seasons in a row, he would top 8 like 4 of 5 PTQs and never win one. It took him a long time to break through. Then something clicked. He had a little success, like a little more success, and then got on Channel Fireball and just skyrocketed. And it's not a coincidence. He was like me. He was way better than me, but he was like me in that I was just kind of doing my own thing. It was like, you know, we were both smart people who understood how to learn and put in a lot of hours. Like, we had very similar career paths up until that point, even though he was better than me and has been the whole time. But at a certain point, was able to, where I crumbled and let my moderate success get to me, he persevered and pushed through, probably because he had all those close misses that he knew that it's so easy to be taken away from you. He fought through it when I was unable to, and then got all the Channel Fireball contacts. He actually, like, I met Luis, like Owen introduced me to Luis in Denver, which was the start of my success. And then Channel Fireball was formed a little while later, and Owen joined a little while after that, and head ahead of Player of the Year race right now.
Luis said, now he disputes that, he said that he was going to win Player of the Year, but he said that he predicted Owen at the beginning of the year to have a very good Pro Tour season.
Yeah, well, because Owen's never had a team with such good dynamics. You know, we used to work together a little back in the day, but, I mean, Owen needs an idea man, and he needs grinders that are on the same level as he is,
yes,
which are rare. And now that he has those things, like, he's a pretty good tuner, but he's a really good grinder. And now that you know, he's got the whole shebang over at Channel Fireball, it's not surprising to me that everybody knew he was going to have a great year, especially people like Luis who have seen him play a lot. Like, people who don't see people play just go off of results and whatever, and Owen, like, before this year didn't have that many results compared to, you know, the rest of the Channel Fireball guys. And so it'd be hard, anybody else would be hard-pressed to really put any money on Owen. But Luis saw him play and understood what he was doing. And so it's not surprising to me at all that he was able to predict Owen's success.
Now, he reflects on a lot of things. I saw when we were with Owen in Chicago, almost seemed like the fact that there was 20,000 on the line didn't even seem to faze him. Because this didn't matter to him
no.
as much as it should have. You'd think it would have because of the money involved.
No, I mean, money doesn't really matter to him. Me either. Most people actually, like, for me, a lot of it is more prestige-based and respect-based. For him, I think he just doesn't care because he's doing so well on the Pro Tour on the biggest stage that anything else is, like, really beneath him. But yeah, like, it doesn't surprise me that the money didn't mean a lot to him. He's one of those guys that just really plays. Like, he just sits down and plays against his opponent and then will hang out between rounds, and then pairings goes up and he walks over and plays against his opponent. You know, it's not like, oh, like, what record do I need to draw in, and, you know, how much if we split here or whatever. You know, he just, like, he loves the game. He loves to actually defeat opponents.
Right now, as you're sitting here talking to me, what is going through your head on what is going to work for AJ?
That is a wonderful question. This is a good place to kind of sum up what I'm feeling, what I'm thinking. Feel like, well, as you can tell, I'm frustrated. Frustrated at a lot of things, a lot of people, life in general, but mostly myself. And I mean, it's a lot easier to be frustrated than it is to do something about that frustration that's productive. And I feel like that's this whole conversation and the thing with OSIP and all this is really, and the tournament in Chicago are all really starting the process of coming back out of this self-loathing depression, you know?
Exactly. I can understand that. And if you can't see or hear this from listening to this, that this is going to be a change. This is going to be a 180 for you.
I'm hoping.
You wouldn't put yourself out there like this.
Yeah, it is.
Your sight.
More than putting myself out there in, yeah, I'm going to do this, I'd like to think this more as me putting myself out there in, I want everyone to know that I know that I can do better. Like, OSIP, in that thing, and when I talked to him online about it, I don't know, like, we're pretty good friends, and he seemed really concerned that I was sort of squandering my talents. And a lot of the reason that I wanted to do this interview was to say he's right. I can do better, and I haven't been, and I can come up with as many excuses as I want, but frankly, I haven't been putting it in the time and the effort, and I would rather complain and point out other things about other people than really look at myself and look at how far I've fallen and how hard it is going to be to climb back up.
If you haven't inspired people, or at least now that you start the process of reaching out to people as far as trying to put something together, if they're not understanding the level of desire that you have to do this, that they should want to jump aboard this, this should be an excellent springboard opportunity to make that next team. If there's people out there that you're reaching out to, that hear this, that want to, that understand your level of passion for this, this should be a possibility of making another great team that can go out there and be a factor and a major.
I mean, it's a process, though. I mean,
you're going to be at Pittsburgh, right?
Yes, I will be in Pittsburgh. Unsure about Philly, but I will be 100% in Pittsburgh.
You have the ability just through those events to start the process going. And you know what? if Jerry's alongside with you on this, it's going to make it a whole hell of a lot easier.
Yeah. I mean, no matter what I'm going to do, Jerry's going to be there. I mean, he's been super helpful and supportive of pretty much everything I've ever done. Yeah. I mean, right now, before all of that, I know that I really need to work on some stuff about me. I've had like my own mental and emotional issues in the past, but I've actually gotten to a point where those are far, far less of a factor. While I was dealing with those, I got into a bunch of bad habits of not practicing and becoming, you know, apathetic and even bitter about the game and tournaments and formats and all that. So the biggest thing from this for me is not AJ starting a team, because that's not what I want people to get out of this. Really, it's a recognition of the faults of myself and the people that are directly around me. Use us as examples, you know, don't make mistakes like we have, and don't think that it's easy for us either.
It may be easy playing at the tournament level you're playing at, but to get back to the level of success you were having previously.
Yeah, I was so, so, so much better 3 years ago than I am now. It blows my mind. I talked about this on the A-Team podcast I was on recently, but I was so much better than I am now that it's, like, embarrassing. Whenever anybody, like, now thinks that I'm good, I immediately think they're, like, patronizing me because I am so much worse. But, yeah, I think I figured out how to get back, figured out what I need to do, and now starts the long and difficult but exciting process. So, should be fun.
Well, you have a lot of supporters that are going to be with you, that are going to go with you with this. And as more people listen to this and hear this, and our fellow pros that listen to this and hear this, it's going to be a good thing for them, because they're going to see that I is back in you to be great. And it's also going to be bad for them, because once you get it, it's going to be different this time.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
And that,
watch out,
right,
people.
There, that right there is the difference. Making a comeback to where you were is going to be something that will be special. Is there anything else you want to talk about before we wrap this up?
No, I'm ready to wrap it up. Just do some shout-outs real quick. Yeah, I mentioned it a couple times, but I was on the A-Team podcast recently, and you guys should check that out. It was really, really fun to do, really cool interview. It got pretty rave reviews, so check it out. If you didn't already listen to the OSIP Men of Magic that this whole thing is based on, shame on you. Go listen to it now. I have a column on StarCityGames.com that you should check out, including a video series. I don't really submit that often because I'm really bad at getting work done, but every once in a while I do publish something and you should check it out. I would like to thank you, Rob Martin, for filling in at this last second and trying to throw this thing together, because I really, really, really wanted to do it, and I'm glad you were able to accommodate me. Yeah, I'll be... Oh, and I'm on Twitter, Hudbot, H-U-D-B-O-T. I'll be in Boston this weekend, and then Pittsburgh. Not sure about Philly, but I go to a lot of events, so feel free to come up, introduce yourself, have a chat. Despite what people on the internet might say... I'm actually quite a nice guy, and I love talking to people who love magic.
Well, this has been a insightful episode of the Men of Magic. For Robert Martin, thank you again for listening, and we are out. Thank you for listening to the Men of Magic. You can contact me at themenofmagic@gmail.com, on Twitter under the Men of Magic, or my personal account, the Beamy. This is Robert Martin, and again, thank you for listening.